We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
RotoWire NFL Podcast, the Thursday edition, brought to you by Dynasty Owner. For September 3rd, I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined by Mario Puig. We got a ton to get to today. Mario and I have both participated in RotoWire online championships over on the NFFC over the course of the last week, so we are, of course, going to be breaking down our teams from those respective drafts. RotoWire's very own Jerry Donabedian was also in my RotoWire online championship that took place Wednesday night, so we'll make fun of his team a little bit as well. No, he has a very good team, actually. I'm kind of mad about it. So we're going to get into all of that. We're also going to get into some news and notes. You may have heard that Leonard Fournette has a new landing spot. We are going to unpack what that means for the Tampa Bay backfield. And we're also going to take a look at the Jacksonville backfield, a couple other odds and ends as we get things rolling here. But before we start off, Mario, how are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. There's some maintenance guys or something, or construction guys doing some kind of pipe work all around in my apartment.
Is that a euphemism?
No, it's just annoying and real and as described. And so you might hear my dog using squeaky toys during this thing because I had to go to like the middle of the room furthest away from the pipes. So sorry about that.
All good. Listener, you've been warned.
So it's not me using the squeaky toy.
Well, I mean, that's for after recording. Let's see, what else? I am back from my trip to Boone, North Carolina. If anyone has not been there yet and is in shouting distance of the mountains in North Carolina, it's amazing. We went up on Grandfather Mountain. I went across this swinging bridge that is exactly 1 mile off the ground in terms of its elevation. That was fun. I got to see the campus over at App State, a beautiful campus that they have going on there. And the town itself is amazing as well. And they have a Mellow Mushroom, which is one of my favorite like small chain pizza places. So any town that has a Mellow Mushroom, I'm always in favor of that. So
you were on like a rope bridge?
It wasn't as rugged as that sounds. It was metal, but it did kind of sway back and forth as I walked across it.
Not gonna do it.
Understandable.
I could barely get over that Chesapeake Bridge or whatever without just, you know, fainting many times. So I'm not going on foot on any kind of bridge that swings like that.
In your defense, the Chesapeake Bay Bridge freaks a lot of people out, and even myself included, as a Maryland native, gets a little bit uncomfortable going across there. That's
you said a mile off the ground, though, didn't you?
I sure did.
Okay, yeah, it's not a mile for the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, is it? I know it's really
it's not
high
that
up,
high.
Terrifying, but yeah. I'm not going on a swinging bridge from, you know, 50 yards up. So I guess I'm impressed by that.
Thank you. I guess ignorance is bliss. I just turned my brain off and just walked across it without thinking of how insane it really was in hindsight. But
Johnny Knoxville, I'm going to call you from now on.
This is crossing a bridge. Anywho. All right, so let's get into some news and notes from around the league. Let's start things out. Let's unpack the Leonard Fournette stuff because there's a lot to get to. There is the general, you know, if you've been diligently following the Tampa Bay news throughout the offseason, and, you know, we've been covering it a fair bit on this podcast as well. Things kind of started to be trending towards like, oh my gosh, Ronald Jones is finally going to happen this year. It looks like Keyshawn Vaughn, just due to lack of availability, just isn't really going to be a major part of this rotation, so we don't have to worry about him if we like Jones. It doesn't seem like McCoy is making a ton of noise. And then Dari Ogunbowale, like you've laid out several times on this podcast, really a very limited as far as what he can really do out there, and what he gives you is very replacement level or maybe even diminishing returns. So it seemed like Ronald Jones was going to end up being a solid value where he was going in ADP in terms of being like a late fifth, early sixth type of guy. And then, of course, Leonard Fournette just comes in and ruins everything. So what happens now?
Well, I have no idea, but Bruce Arians is saying even today, Thursday, that Ronald Jones is still his guy unless he screws it up or whatever the quote was. And you could easily infer that that means there's a quick leash situation here, and that would certainly make sense. I don't know whether I think Jones will fail particularly. A lot of people are reading it as just like, oh, that's just Arians lying. There's this meme going around, like, Arians lies about his running backs. It's not really that he lies about them. Arians is actually pretty honest a lot of the time. It's just that, like, people were pointing at, like, oh, look, he said Chris Johnson's going to be the guy. Andre Ellington's going to be the guy. Andre Ellington got hurt. That one's not complicated if you just look at what happened there. And Chris Johnson, it was like they went with him. He sucked. They eventually went away from him. Whichever year that was that David Johnson emerged, that might have been the Chris Johnson case. I don't know.
2015?
And we know that Arians isn't exactly dishonest, at least he's not all the time, because after those games last year, he just said, like, yeah, I'm pissed off at Ronald Jones because he missed a block. It's like, was he lying then? Or is he only lying when it suits whatever it is that you want to sell to people? I think it's the second one. But I don't think there's any way for outsiders to know a whole lot in this case. And I know people want to hear, like, a decisive verdict. As far as that goes, the closest one I can give anybody is stay away from the whole thing. I don't see the point really in going after either Jones or Fournette in drafts. I didn't go after either of them in the first place either, and I think that's just because regardless of what you think of Ronald Jones or Keyshawn Vaughn before that, there's more value to be had in the wide receiver personnel in that part of the draft. And so I've adhered to that rule every single draft of mine, so I just never end up in the situation where I have to wonder what I think about Jones. Like, someone else always takes him while I'm taking DJ Chark or Terry McLaurin or whatever. So I'm going to keep doing that, and I would recommend that other people do as well, because to me it looks like the ball could break in a lot of directions right here, and anyone who tells you that they know anything definitively, I think you could probably ignore.
Right. Yeah. That is like the big takeaway right now is that there are no definites, and, you know, Fournette, you know, maybe just got into the building today as we're recording. So, you know, he's going to have to get up to speed fairly quickly. I think in terms of talent, it's probably fair to say that he's the most talented running back on this team. But at the same time, that I feel like that's a fairly low bar. And I've been out on Fournette throughout the course of this draft season. Even when he was on the Jaguars, he was part of that tier of running backs that I just didn't really have a ton of interest in, whether it's him, Melvin Gordon, Todd Gurley, James Conner, those types of guys. I just have been intentionally not getting shares of them. Fournette, for example, last night, I think he got signed like during the draft or something like that. As the draft was unfolding, he went in the early part of the seventh round, it looks like. So he fell, and Ronald Jones went five picks before him. And I think that I would imagine whoever took Ronald Jones there probably just did not have the news in front of them. So that was an unfortunate break for them. But either way, I'm with you in the sense that this is a backfield that I'm going to be steering away for the most part. I'm just not really going to end up with any shares, at least from here on. But do you think that this signing of Fournette, and of course they did sign LeSean McCoy earlier this summer, is this sort of any hand tipping? And they've also talked about, you know, running the two tight end as their base personnel, that sort of thing. Is this a hand tipping that they are going to be a, you know, a bit of a run first or power type of offense here, even though they have, you know, Tom Brady and the ridiculous group of wide receivers?
I don't think it's indicating anything on the philosophy part of their offense, because they couldn't have foreseen this happening unless they were planning on doing this the whole, or if they were planning on doing this the whole time and they were prepared to go into the year without this supposedly like according running back personnel until the Jaguars surprisingly cut Fournette, then they'd have to be a uniquely incompetent team. I think their plan has nothing to do with Fournette. I think Fournette just became available and they didn't expect it, but they, you know, just looked at him as a free agent, said, well, $1 million, $2 million, you say, sure, why the hell not? Like it's they didn't spend anything to get him. And that's another funny thing about this. Like, you're going to see some people who are saying, oh, Fournette is clearly ahead of Ronald Jones. Clearly the Buccaneers don't like Ronald Jones. It's like, well, then why didn't they add somebody before Fournette? Why did it take a team shockingly releasing this guy 10 days before the season before they added Fournette? And if Fournette's so valued across the league, if it's so obvious that Fournette's better than Ronald Jones, then why did he sign for a 1 year, $2 million contract
and get through waivers?
I remember like last, it hasn't happened as much this year, but last offseason, a couple off seasons before that, probably it was real trendy to do this fantasy analysis where you just basically click descending order of salary and go like, oh, this guy's salary is higher than this guy, so he clearly, the team's going to play. Deion Lewis is getting paid more than Derrick Henry, so look at what's going to happen now. You don't understand numbers like me. And it's like, okay, well, where are you now then? What does that 1 year, $2 million for Leonard Fournette mean to you? And I've seen people try to rationalize it by saying like, oh, but he's going to get a grievance payout. It's like, he's not factoring that into it. Like, his market was cold because A, he's probably not very good. Like, if you look at his numbers across his career, they're not good. They're replacement level at best. Last year, he had a lot of yards on the ground, but he had a lot of usage driving that. He had 4 carries over 40 yards, which was a fluke, and he still only had 4.3 yards per carry. If you have 4 carries over 40 yards, you should be doing 4.3. You should be doing better than 4.3 yards per carry, especially when you only have 3 touchdowns. So the idea that Fournette is actually good has no solid basis at this point, and we have reason to believe the league believes that based on his contract that he got from the Buccaneers. And you know, it's also like he was not a particularly likable player with the Jaguars. They seem pretty reliably alienated from him, and I think they wanted to cut him back in like May or whenever he said that thing. He said something about Minshew or something, and then all of a sudden you heard, look, the Jaguars are shopping Fournette. And clearly it was that moment that they decided they were going to cut him. It's just that they decided, oh, wait, let's see if we can trade. Maybe August will come and someone will give us a seventh round pick for him. And then that never happened and they cut him then. But they chose to cut him way before that. And it's like, if he was good, do you think they make that call right then? Do you think if he's as good as someone might assume he is, that he would have been just tossed aside on the basis of making some Instagram slight toward a sixth round pick rookie quarterback? Like, I just don't think that people are looking through all these things, and they're just kind of deferring for the people who are optimistic about Fournette and pessimistic on Jones and calling this like, oh, Fournette's going to get 70% of the work from now on. Like, you don't know much about him, and I know you don't, because he didn't produce in the past like Jones did last year. Like, he hasn't produced better than him, and the teams have no reason to be like drawn toward his personality. So if Arians was slighting Jones last year because he's just like getting irritated with his blitz pickup and stuff, just wait till he meets Fournette. Like, wait till you see, like, wait till they see like what kind of person he is, what to be around. It's like I just saw the Last Dance thing on Netflix. So I'm from this point in the podcast, I'm going to make all analogies relative to the 1990s Chicago Bulls. It's like Fournette's kind of like the Michael Jordan level of abrasiveness, but without any of the actual merit. Like he doesn't win respect by being as good as he is abrasive. So this idea that like, oh, finally they got this guy, Leonard Fournette, that they want so bad, who's so good, and they don't like Ronald Jones because he's bad. It's like, well, I don't really see, they could both lose then. Like, I don't see why anyone thinks Fournette's just going to go run away with this. He hasn't done it on the field, and off the field, he reliably seems to alienate people, whereas at least it doesn't seem like Jones has that against him. Like, maybe Jones isn't that good, but I don't think he's worse than Fournette. And he knows the offense too. Like, whatever happened to making such a big deal out of that? Like,
right?
Fournette in
yeah,
10
they,
days,
they really pick just... and choose. Like, they're, you know, sort of like the manatees in South Park or whatever. You know, that come up with the Family Guy cutaway gags or whatever. It's like, oh,
except if the manatees were picking the subjects on the basis of what would drive up their site subscription the most.
These manatees have MBAs.
Yeah. But yeah, as a scouting report for Fournette goes, I think it's pretty obvious he's a big guy. He's really physically strong. He's freakishly fast for how, but he doesn't have functional athleticism and strength for football related tasks. Like, he's heavy and strong, but he doesn't have good balance. So he runs into people and he tips over. He doesn't break tackles as much as you would expect. He's heavier above his feet than in the ankles and legs. So he doesn't have any real anchor for all this mass that he's carrying. So it's all kind of a waste. And it's like, he can do these stunts. Sure. But he can't functionally use that athleticism in any useful way, or at least it hasn't happened in Jacksonville. So, I don't think there's much to him other than kind of the opportunity that he might get. And maybe he gets the opportunity. Maybe Bruce Arians does feed him, and maybe he gets some touchdowns because the Buccaneers are a good team and they're in scoring position a lot. I just don't see why Ronald Jones would do worse than him in those opportunities. And I don't see anything about Fournette as a character or Fournette in these 10 days that he has to prepare that would lead the Buccaneers to basically just blacklist Jones. I mean, people are talking about people are panicking about Kerryon Johnson starting like the entire year because DeAndre Swift is limited in practice with the season 10 games away. It's like, you think Fournette coming into this team with no background there and then that system or anything is just going to run away with it? Like, I just don't understand what coherent standard anyone has anymore.
You know, they're just projecting like wish casting what they want to happen, what's good for what they've already drafted in their respective like draft portfolios, and just kind of hoping that it pans out the best for them. And I see no way in which this backfield isn't just a complete headache for you know, fantasy players. Like, this is for redraft, picking between Jones and Fournette for your starting lineup in week one, like, forget about it. Like, I just would have no interest in trying to do that, at least, you know, from this point forward. If I were to have either a Jones or a Fournette on my team, certainly not going after either of them in DFS. And, you know, maybe that I'm shutting myself off to some sort of upside scenario, but I don't really see it. Like you said, Fournette, 265 carries last year, 7 of them only went for over 20 yards. Ronald Jones almost matched that on like 100 fewer carries. He had 6 rushes of over 20 yards on 172 carries.
Also, Fournette had really bad, I don't know how pass blocking works that well, but Fournette had really uniquely bad pass blocking grades from PFF the past 3 years.
I guess Bruce Arians will of course overlook that one.
That's why
Fournette,
he
right?
will like him so yeah. much. Yeah. But also Mike Garofalo, NFL Network guy, yep. he was saying that LeSean McCoy was told that he's still on the team and he still has a role, and that it will particularly occur in passing downs. So to be fair to the Jones haters, he had bad pass blocking grades too, and Arians complained about him and his bad pass blocking even in a press conference. So if him and Fournette are both bad pass blockers, then McCoy really might be the passing down guy, which is to say we might have Fournette and Ronald Jones splitting something like 750 snaps on some basis. So it sucks. I don't want anything to do with this.
Yep, it's gross. I think we've exhausted it. We've fracked the heck out of this this hill here as far as the Bucks backfield is concerned.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. If you're looking for a credit card that fits your lifestyle, look no further. U.S. Bank has credit cards that make every day rewarding, no matter what you're into. Feeling hungry? Check out the U.S. Bank Altitude Go Visa Signature Card. Earn 4x points on takeout, food delivery, and dining. And get 2x points at gas stations, grocery stores, and on streaming. That'll keep your wallet and your mouth full. Big spender? The U.S. Bank Visa Platinum Card has a low intro APR for large purchases or balance transfers. And you call the shots with the U.S. Bank Cash Plus Visa Signature Card. Choose two categories each quarter. Earn 5% back on your first $2,000 of eligible purchases from those categories. So don't just get a credit card, get the right card to make every day more rewarding. Cash back, merchandise, travel rewards, and low intro APRs are waiting. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. The creditor and issuer of these cards is U.S. Bank National Association, pursuant to a license from Visa USA, Inc., and the cards are available to United States residents only. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Let's talk about the team that Leonard Fournette was recently released from, the Jacksonville Jaguars, to give a bit of, you know, market update, a little bit of added context. Looks like Raquel Armstead seems to be like the most coveted draft asset since Fournette's departure. He went in the middle of the 9th round in my draft on Wednesday night. So yeah, that probably is too high. I ended up circling back and getting James Robinson with my second to last pick before I took my kicker. And I feel okay about that. I mean, it's your 19th round pick. You're not really expecting a ton one way or the other. And if it ends up working out and he ends up starting for me, even for 1 week, I would call that a win at that stage of the draft. But, you know, people are trying to make things out of, you know, a litany of these Jaguars running backs, whether it's, again, it's Armstead, whether it's Divine Azigbo, whether it is James Robinson, and then Chris Thompson kind of away from the equation, really, because he's not going to be taking on a whole lot of first and second down work. He'll only be out there in obvious passing situations for the most part, plus the fact that he is a durability concern nonetheless. So what's your read on this backfield? Is this one that you're also going to just kind of be fading from here on out?
Not necessarily, because the prices are a lot cheaper than in the Tampa case. And I know the offense will be worse, but the a lot cheaper, to the point that in the case of Ozigbo and James Robinson, they're basically free. I guess there could be some scenarios where I would take on Armstead, but to me, he went from basically like a 20th round pick to a, I don't know, maybe 12th, 13th, 14th, something like that. So if he's going in the 9th, I'm not going to get any. I don't care. He is good at a couple of things, but pass catching is not one of them. So his ceiling and his floor are both pretty low. If he has any utility to offer us this year, it has to do with his running ability, where he is probably pretty good. I mean, he's 5'10", 5'11", 220, and he runs that 4.45. So you talk about that kind of speed, that, you know, 4.45 on a 220 frame, that's a lot to work with right there for running purposes. And at Temple, he was always pretty good. He had one down year where he averaged like 3.9 yards per carry. But if I remember right, he was playing hurt that year. Mm-hmm. He's hurt now. I don't even remember what it is, but like as of today, Thursday, he's still not in practice from this thing that's it's got to be like a week or 10 days that he's been out now. And that's going to happen to a guy like him. I compared him as a prospect to Chris Ivory, because they're both these guys who are like 220 plus, who are pretty explosive when you give them a football and just put them in a running drill, put them in a, you know, a tunnel between the tackles, and they bash through it pretty fast. But they don't do anything else really, and they get hurt a lot because they invite so much contact. And Armstead's one of those guys. Like, if you turn on his Temple tape, he's got a lot of motor. Like he's one of those guys who people kind of tacklers kind of bounce off of him because they're just shocked at how much harder he's playing than they are. And that's good to carry into the NFL, but it also means, like, you know, if you're inviting that much contact, eventually something's going to go wrong for you. So he's got the speed and the ability to break tackles, but it's a question of like how many tackles can his body even withstand breaking. And you know he's not going to compete with Chris Thompson for pass catching, because at Temple he was a really bad receiver too.
Yep.
So I think Chris Thompson, all the same, is someone you shouldn't chase. Like, I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, well, that means Chris Thompson's going to get a promotion. If Chris Thompson were going to get a promotion because of that Fournette release, Chris Thompson would have gotten a promotion a long time ago, because Chris Thompson has always been a really good runner and pass catcher both. He was on track to be probably like a pretty high draft pick at Florida State. He had a really big year as a true sophomore. uniquely explosive player, but he broke his back. And then his career looked like it was going to be over. And then he had – I don't even remember. He had a torn ACL a couple of years ago, right? And you look through his career log, it's like 10 games, 11 games, 10 games, 10 games. So he has as much injury concern as basically anybody aside from, you know, Jordan Reed and Brandon Cooks or something like that. And they know that. That's why he never got that promotion before, because they saw him get hurt over and over and they're like, man, this sucks. We wish we could use Chris more, but he keeps getting hurt. So let's limit his snaps to 25, 30 snaps a game. That was what he was going to play with Fournette there, and he's not going to play more than that because Fournette is gone. With that said, if he's cheap enough in a PPR league, Chris Thompson could be a guy who gives you decent flex weeks because he is good. Like, he's definitely a skilled player. The only question is, like, what kind of usage is he going to get? And the answer is almost certainly not much as a runner. And even what he does as a pass catcher will be subject to, you know, the snap count cap that he has. So if you can get him in like the, I don't know, 15th, 16th or later, and you just kind of need some running back utility, someone who can just give you some snaps, I can't really argue against him there. But if people are chasing him higher than that on the assumption that he has upside, that's just wrong. He doesn't have much upside, and his floor is pretty low because of the durability issues.
Yeah, so Chris Thompson, not someone that I'm particularly targeting. I think you laid it out right in the sense that, you know, once you get to a certain point in the draft, you know, any port in a storm, and if you need, you know, some running back snaps, some running back help, a little bit later on in your drafts, then he definitely makes some sense. But like you said, certainly not something to be chasing after. So when it comes to what the rushing down workload looks like, and again, you laid out what Armstead's trajectory looks like, and how he is good, he is going to be effective, but it's a question of how long he's going to be able to hold up given that style. So then we get into the question of what to make out of Divine Azigbo and James Robinson, respectively. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, there's some people who are really high on Divine Azigbo in kind of like fantasy football Twitter. I tend to believe the people that are high on him are consistently wrong about prospects. And I know why they like him. It's because they turn on the preseason tape or his Nebraska tape and like, oh, he had some big plays. He runs hard. He does run hard. Like Armstead, Azigbo is a high motor guy. Like, he's always going to have, 110% effort out there. But it's one of those things. He's so lacking in athletic talent that he needs to be at 110% motor just to be within any kind of competitive margin of the players that he's going against. And if you're running at 110% all the time, you're probably going to run out of gas faster than the other guys who can be good without using 110% of their effort all the time. So I think Azigbo is basically like a poor man's Kenneth Farrow. And
ooh, nice.
You might have. And if you're a normal person, you probably don't even know who Kenneth Farrow is. And I guess I'm just going to say, like, you don't really need to learn. It doesn't really matter. It's just Azigbo's a guy who will run hard, and he's got a good build to withstand contact. But he ran a 4.65 at the Nebraska Pro Day, so that could be anything from a 4.7 to a 4.75 on the combine track. And on the combine track, James Robinson ran a 4.64. Armstead ran a 4.45. So Ozigbo's way behind those guys in terms of athleticism. And as much as he's got some like anchor ability, he can run hard. He can probably get you some third and ones, stuff like that. I just think that even if he can, Armstead and Robinson are both better at that too. And Robinson is the one that I'm probably ending up with if I'm ending up with any of them. He's not always free. I think him getting to the 19th in your draft is about the best case scenario. And in your case, I definitely like to get him. But yeah, Robinson, he's 5'9", 219, and he had one of the most impressive seasons at Illinois State last year that I've ever seen from a running back. I actually kind of like woke up at night a while ago because I kind of thought that I must have gotten something wrong when I typed in to this article, my all overlooked rookie article from way back in April 3rd, which has aged incredibly well. It's kind of funny, actually. But yeah, Robinson is one of the guys that I listed in there. And I mentioned in Illinois State last year, they threw the ball in 15 games. That's three more than what you get in most college seasons in the FBS level. And so in the FCS, they play 15 games. James Robinson runs for 1,917 yards and 18 touchdowns. Do you want to guess how much the Illinois State offense threw for that year?
Did they throw for like 2,000 yards?
They threw for 1,767 and 10 touchdowns. Oh, James Robinson ran for more yards by about 150, exactly 150 more yards than the team threw for. He had 8 more rushing touchdowns than they did passing touchdowns. And the second, this is not like a Nebraska back in the day with Eric Crouch and Darren Diedrich or whoever. This is just James Robinson doing everything, because the second leading rusher had 476 yards at 4.3 yards per carry, which was a full yard less per carry than Robinson accomplished, while putting up almost 5 times as much yardage. And then he adds a 40-inch vertical at the combine and 125-inch broad jump. Like, he has a Zach Moss kind of frame, and that vertical is 93rd percentile according to Mock Draftable. The broad jump is 88th percentile. This guy is really dense, and he's really springy, and his college production pretty much tells us he can run. He might not be good at pass catching. I don't really know how to evaluate him there, and I don't know how to evaluate him as a pass blocker, but for what it's worth, people around Jacksonville media were tweeting out some stuff about, look at this pancake he got on this linebacker in this blitz pickup drill, and so maybe he's good at that. And if he is, I think he, in the long term, if you're giving me like a 18-month, 2-year timeline, I'm picking Robinson without knowing the price between Armstead himself and Ozigbo. So right now, with him being cheaper than those guys, I think it's definitely right to go with him, if any of them.
I really like how you framed that. He's someone that has that really intriguing athleticism. Not that Armstead doesn't, but like you said, you know, the draft day acquisition costs so different for these guys, where Robinson is close to free. Armstead obviously getting pushed up now. It seems like inside the top 10 rounds, I won't get him there. So, you know, all of that in mind, I think that Robinson is really does fit the bill as that late round flyer. I've seen one comparison, and I don't think they're similar as players, but in terms of potential rookie year trajectory, maybe a Philip Lindsay type of year.
Yeah, it could happen. And, you know, Lindsay's a good player, so I don't want to make expectations too high for Robinson. But I mean, like you said, it's not like anyone, it's not like anyone predicted Lindsay would – well, you – other than you, I guess no one predicted what Lindsay would do that year. And it would not be that much more surprising if Robinson did something like that.
You see? So keep an open mind for these undrafted guys. Sometimes they slip through the cracks, and the NFL teams don't have all the answers. And, you know, somebody like a Lindsay or maybe in this case a James Robinson finds their way into fantasy utility. Before we move on over to our respective NFFC drafts, got a message from our friends over at Dynasty Owner. I've been looking for a new challenge, which is why I'm playing on Dynasty Owner Fantasy Football this season. Dynasty Owner Fantasy Football unites the fun and excitement of fantasy football with the skill and strategy of the front office. Dynasty Owner is the only way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an NFL franchise. Dynasty Owner provides a unique challenge for diehard fantasy football fanatics. Go to dynastyowner.com/rotowire. Leagues are forming right now. That's dynastyowner.com/rotowire. We've all been in those leagues where the winner just got lucky. And if you're like me and you know you're better than most, Dynasty Owner gives you the platform to prove it. Dynasty Owner favors skilled players who can manage their roster using real NFL salaries within the salary cap. It adds an entirely new level of strategy. Go to dynastyowner.com/rotowire. Validate your fantasy football skills. That's dynastyowner.com/rotowire. Dynasty Owner, start your dynasty today. And we also got a message from our friends over at FanDraft. Take your league's fantasy football draft to the next level with FanDraft, the online fantasy football draft board. FanDraft makes your draft feel like the actual NFL draft with features such as a streaming ticker, live draft, custom logos, team walk-up songs, multiple draft board displays, and more. FanDraft can be used for offline, for in-person drafts by exporting the display via projector or onto a large screen TV, but it can also be used fully online, and any number of your league owners can join the draft remotely. You can also perform traditional and auction style drafts. FanDraft also supports IDP, rookie only drafts, keepers, and just about any customization to meet your league's requirements. You can sign up for a free trial at fandraft.com. And when you're ready to order the pro account, make sure to use promo code ROTOPOD15. That's ROTOPOD15 to save 15% off your purchase. Again, that's fandraft.com. Use promo code ROTOPOD15 to save 15%. All right, Mario, let's get steered on over to the NFFC. Let's start out with your draft. Yours took place on Friday, so a couple of guys will obviously have had very different ADPs since then. We can get into some of that movement when we look at my draft, but let's get into your general roster build again, just for context. If you're not familiar with the NFFC, it is a PPR format, full point PPR. 12-team leagues, 20 rounds, so pretty deep benches that you're getting into. Very, very sharp rooms. A big lesson that I learned, or that I've learned now 2 years in a row, but you know, learned it the hard way type of thing, is that you can't really hope to pass your sleeper through to the next round,
right?
Especially if you're picking towards the middle of your respective round. It can be a very, very dangerous game. I know when we get into mine, what we'll talk about the fallout from me getting sniped on Zach Moss, that really had ended up changing my running back strategy in a way that I'm a little bit tepid on how my running back depth ended up turning out as a result. But again, Mario was drafting on Friday, drafted out of the eighth spot in this particular format, and you went RB heavy early, and you still managed to get some pretty strong receivers as well, and really fill out your starting lineup pretty nicely through the first 10 rounds. So let's dive in there. How did you get started, and were you envisioning going that running back heavy early on?
I kind of envisioned it, and I actually so you can set up you can't like pick the slot that you want to draft from, but you can issue your preferences, and then the site for the NFFC crunches everybody's preferences, and I don't know, they do coin flipping algorithms, I'm sure, when everybody puts, you know, I want McCaffrey, please, and then, you know, some lucky person gets that pick, and then everybody else gets their second, third, fourth preference or whatever. I had the eighth slot as something like my third preference, after probably first for McCaffrey and third for Zeke in mind. But I put that eighth spot because I looked at the ADP from about the week leading up to my draft, because I noticed Nick Chubb was falling into kind of like the 16th, 15th pick. So I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to pick Nick Chubb, I hope. And so I'm going to make my draft slot around where I can realistically get him as late as possible. So I ended up with the eighth pick, which was fine with me. At the time, Joe Mixon's contract situation was up in the air, and I already had a share of Joe Mixon on my NFFC best ball team. So I thought maybe I should diversify here. Like, in hindsight, maybe I would have doubled down on Mixon with my eighth pick. But at the time, and I'm still okay with this, I took Derrick Henry, and that works fine for me. I like Henry a lot. With Mixon, the only question is, like, he's got more pass catching upside. I think Mixon is clearly one of the best pass catchers at running back, even though the Bengals haven't used him yet. I can imagine that Joe Burrow improves that offense and they get a lot more first downs than they did before. And it kind of just lends to more pass catching opportunities to Mixon, even if they don't make it a strategic focal point. But I also think they might make it a strategic focal point. So I do like Mixon there. I went with Henry to, I guess, diversify, though. And you know, hopefully that does the trick. Nick Chubb at the 16th pick or whatever I had him at, I love that. I think people are just straight up wrong about him. I think a lot of loud voices with big platforms are leading people into faulty premises. And I need to hammer it. I need to try to exploit that and you know, put my money where my mouth is. So I'm going all Chubb all the time, pretty much, until people start respecting him, which I guess they never will, because they're still chasing that nostalgia of how smart they felt when they picked Kareem Hunt in the eighth round 4 years ago and Spencer Ware got hurt, thus proving how smart they were. But I think that it makes sense to approach the first two rounds like I did. And then in the third round, this is where I actually had to make my first decision, really. And I kind of had it made a little easier for me because I was looking at Odell Beckham for that pick. I was thinking I might go receiver here, But Odell Beckham went off the board, and I still think Odell Beckham is a top three receiver. Like, I think he's better than Michael Thomas. I know you can't say that, but I think he's better than Michael Thomas. It's to me Julio, and then probably Odell. Or,
yeah, I mean, Thomas. Know. Thomas is like, you know, not to like diverge this into like a fantasy versus reality debate, but Thomas is only being the first receiver pick because of his utility for fantasy purposes. Like, no one would have him as their wide receiver one in terms of talent.
Yeah, he's just like what would happen if Keyshawn Johnson had been coached by, you know, had played with Kurt Warner or something like that. But anyway. With Odell taking the pick before me, I did briefly consider Mike Evans or DJ Moore or somebody like that, because I was like, oh, well, that would be a nice kind of, you know, floor to give myself at receiver going into the fourth round. But then I thought about, you know, the tournament phase of the NFFC and how that grand prize kind of requires you to do goofy stuff and get big, like almost incomprehensible upside. So I thought, out of hell with it, I'll just take Jonathan Taylor. What's the difference? I mean, it's either like I rank really high or I don't rank high enough. And I feel like the risk with Taylor is kind of overstated, in my opinion. And if he takes 2 or 3 weeks to get going, I think I can weather that storm, because I feel like I got decent foundation other places in my roster. So Henry and Chubb gives me a really nice, I think, high upside foundation at running back that lets me take that additional home run swing for Taylor. And then in the fourth round, it was already, of course, the problem with drafting that way in NFFC is that people take quarterbacks and tight ends quite a bit later, I think, than, or I guess this was pretty typical in relative to even some best ball leagues. But in this case, Tyler Boyd barely got to me in the early fifth round. And I feel like he usually falls to the sixth and seventh in most best ball leagues that I've done. I don't know why that is. I don't think he should be falling that far. I actually think that the early fifth where I took him is where he should go. I'm just not used to having to take him that soon. So it was a close call. Someone took Tyler Lockett ahead of him, which I think is a mistake. There's a couple picks here and there that I really didn't agree with that let me get these guys. So I was lucky, I think, to get this team. But in the fourth, I took AJ Brown. Maybe that was a bad idea, since I have Henry already and the respective highest upside scenarios for the two kind of involve an absence for the other. But I think Brown was just kind of the best receiver available. I thought briefly about taking DJ Chark, but that was the choice in the fourth round, the kind of mid-late fourth round. excuse me, it was AJ Brown who I took, and then the next receivers taken were Chark, Cortland Sutton, Terry McLaurin, Marquise Brown. So I think I would do it the same way again, even though I am kind of, you know, perhaps limiting my really high upside scenario by not leaving myself in position to capitalize if either of Henry or Brown gets hurt, God forbid. But I do like the first five rounds in any case of Henry, Chubb, Taylor, AJ Brown, Tyler Boyd. There is a 6-point passing touchdown scoring detail with the NFFC draft, so waiting on quarterback is totally reasonable to do, but I think that with Lamar and Pat Mahomes kind of forging a new tier of quarterback scoring, that there's more of a risk in punting than before. It's a risk that's rational, but I think it's still risky than before, because in past years, waiting on quarterback was just the obvious thing to do. Like, I don't think there was a case for taking a quarterback early in the past. But I do think Lamar and Pat Mahomes changed the game, and I think Dak Prescott is going to go into that kind of third – sorry, the third quarterback behind them, mm-hmm. and kind of like a new second tier that's higher than any of the previous second tiers. So in the late sixth round, I thought, you know, I like my running backs and receivers enough. I'll take Dak. I hoped I could get CeeDee Lamb a little bit later, but he didn't quite make it to my eighth round pick. I took Darren Waller in the seventh, and this is something that I maybe should have done differently. I went into the draft knowing I wanted to wait at tight end. Like, I knew I would see at some point a tight end that I thought was a bargain, and I wanted myself to pass on them anyway, because it's the PPR scoring makes it easier for these later tight ends like TJ Hockenson, Chris Herndon, Irv Smith to be useful, in my opinion, because they're in offenses where there's kind of just cheap targets up for grab. Not so much Hockenson. Like, I think he could score touchdowns, but it's like Herndon, just because the Jets receivers are so bad, that guy's going to catch 80 passes if he plays 16 games. And in PPR, getting 80 catches in the 13th round at tight end, that's all. But I went with Waller at the mid-early seventh round, largely because I felt so comfortable about my foundations at running back and receiver and quarterback, but also because I just think Waller is underrated, and I think he projects well for another 90 catches this year. And I don't have as much durability concern with him as I do with Chris Herndon. So I was like, man, I didn't really expect Waller to be here. I took him. And also part of the reason I rationalized that pick was like, I didn't really like the receivers that were available that much. At that early seventh round pick, I was either choosing between Waller or CeeDee Lamb. And I figured CeeDee Lamb might make it to my next pick in the eighth round. He didn't. So I wasn't able to pair CeeDee Lamb with Dak Prescott, which isn't ideal. But I went to an alternative, which I liked plenty at the time. And I'm still okay with it, although you might have heard Jalen Reagor has a shoulder injury, and I don't think it's all settled yet. They've been saying he's probably going to miss a month. I don't know if it's all settled yet. I could imagine more bad news to come from that one, just because when you talk about like partial labrum tear, that sounds like you're getting into sort of like experimental treatment territory.
Send him to Germany.
If Rager's okay, that pick of him in the late eighth would have been sick. I still think I might be okay at receiver, though, because in the next round I got Sterling Shepard, a guy who I don't normally end up with because he is a major concussion risk. But some receivers that they took ahead of him, I'm going to say Diontae Johnson should not go ahead of Sterling Shepard. I wouldn't want Jarvis Landry over Sterling Shepard. Emmanuel Sanders went almost a round earlier than Sterling Shepard, which I think is just totally wrong. But Sterling Shepard's a guy who I think is definitely a good player, a standout starting NFL receiver. If he's healthy, he just has the concussion concerns, which are huge. But in the ninth round, as my wide receiver four, it's like, I know this guy can be my wide receiver three if he's healthy. So if I can get him as a wide receiver four with the asterisk that he's an injury risk, that's fine. In the 10th round, I went with Antonio Gibson, who I seriously considered taking over Sterling Shepard in the early 9th, because Antonio Gibson's wide receiver eligible in the NFFC system. And late 10th round, and that's just where you're getting into the part of the draft where I don't consider him actually risky anymore, because it's a 10th round pick. It's a late 10th round pick in my case. And it's one thing to chase somebody into kind of like that first 6-7 sort of rounds, but it's like, we got my starting lineup already arranged here. Like if my backup isn't good, that's not ideal, of course, but if he's a high upside backup, it's just that's all I really care about anymore. It's like I'm not depending on him, so if he burns out, it doesn't matter. And if he does hit his upside scenario, I'm just loaded then. And it's not quite like Devin Johnson at Marshall when he was tight end eligible and ran for like 20 touchdowns when they moved him to running back. But if you can have a starting pass catching running back as a wide receiver, you generally would like to have that. Like if Derrick Henry, Chubb, and Taylor all hit and Adrian Peterson gets hurt, I could have, you know, four of the top whatever eight running backs, and one of them might be at receiver behind AJ Brown and Tyler Boyd and maybe even Rager or Shaq. So I think that's a really nice setup that I got going there. And the next round I choked. I kind of just panicked with the clock counting down, because that'll happen in these drafts too, by the way. It's like you said, you're targeting people, and eventually you'll get to this pick where you're like, oh, I don't like any of these options, because all these people are smart and they take all the good ones that you used to get are going two rounds earlier than you expected. I ended up with Brandon Ayuk, and that was a reach objectively, because he was going like two rounds later in the ADP than where I took him. But the next receiver taken, Justin Jefferson, I haven't heard of him being in the starting practices yet. I think that'll happen very soon. I don't believe BC Johnson can hold him off, but it's like, I know the 49ers kind of need Ayuk if he's able to play in week one. And as much as I don't think he's anywhere near Justin Jefferson as a prospect, the Shanahan factor can make a receiver quite a bit better than they actually are. Mm-hmm. And it was also kind of like an upside chase kind of thing. So from there, I got Joe Burrow as my backup quarterback in the late 12th. I like that enough. Dallas Goedert is my backup tight end. I took him in the 13th. I was hoping to get Herndon. He went a few picks earlier, though. At that point, I took Goedert because I was trying to use that maximum upside sort of premise.
Sanity, would if Jarwin and Goedert were available, which one would you have chosen?
I would have taken Jarwin. He actually went the pick earlier, the one pick before I took Goddard. And then when I took Goddard, it was basically like, well, if Zach Ertz gets hurt, I guess that makes Goddard a top 7 or 8 tight end right away. And I'm not going to use him otherwise. So what does it matter to me what his mid-range outcome is? And I don't know, maybe he would have been the best mid-range outcome guy too, because the next tight end taken was like Jack Doyle, who I have no interest in this year.
Yeah.
And then Ian Thomas after that. So anyway, I ended up with Goddard. I wasn't excited about that. I don't really like my Goddard pick or my Ayuk pick that much. If I could, I would just switch Ayuk for Herndon or hell, Jarwin, I guess. So, but it's fine. I think Goddard's a good player. It's just Ertz obviously will eat a lot up if he's on the field, and we have every reason to think he will be. After that, I took Benny Snell in the 14th round. I was a little bit caught off guard by how quick the running backs went. Even guys like McKinnon and like Darrell Williams, Joshua Kelly, they're going in that 13th, 14th round range. Like, you can't get them after that in NFFC drafts. The running backs you're talking after the sort of 12th, 13th, 14th round are more like Ito Smith types, Eno Benjamin types. So anybody that you got as like a running back 5 or 6 in your best ball drafts or your normal leagues, you have to assume they're going to be gone by the end of the 14th round. And so, but I was okay with Snell. I mean, he's, I don't know what to make of the thing about him losing weight and being more of a pass catcher. I think he's still not going to be fast or anything. He was slow at 225 or whatever. Dropping to 212 isn't going to make him all of a sudden run like a 4.5 flat. But if it gets some more passing down snaps, that's fine. And Connor has a bad shoulder history, so we'll see about that. Anyway, I took in the 15th, Legatron. Took my defenses in the 16th and 17th, Buffalo and Tampa Bay. And then to kind of cover up the scenario of Snell being a rushing specialist in the event of a Connor injury, I took Jalen Samuels in the 18th. And then in the 19th and 20th, I took Reggie Bonifon and Ty Montgomery.
What's the – I mean, it is your 20th pick, so, I mean, any number of reasons can make it make sense. But what was the Ty Montgomery rationale? I'd, like, forgotten about him completely.
Well, he's with the Saints now, and this wasn't about Kamara's contract. I don't think the Saints are trading Alvin Kamara. I think they pretty obviously won't. But in the 20th round, it's just like, you're looking at a bunch of useless players, basically guys that you just kind of assume you're going to cut. So if I'm going to spend a pick on somebody like that, I'm just going to kind of chase the maximum upside I can think of. And it's like, if Kamara's out, then Montgomery, I think, is the pass catching specialist and Murray's the running specialist. And I still think Ty Montgomery is a talented player. I just think he got hurt and Green Bay ditched him. And then he kept getting hurt in practice with the teams that were, you know, kicking the tires on him. And he never really got an audition again. But if he does get on the field, I still believe he's, you know, he's like 220 and he's fast and he's always been like a good open field runner. It's just he gets busted so much that, you know, one day he ends up on the Saints. And I don't know. They're saying good things about him in practice, though. So who knows? I don't really care. It was just like PPR scoring, plays on the Saints, whatever. I'm going to cut him anyway for probably like a kicker.
Right. Exactly. So like you said, you know, this is 20th round total, you know, you gotta have like 3 things happen for it to end up working out. But if it does, hey, you look like an absolute genius. But if not, again, no real big deal there. We're going to move on over to my team. But before then, we got a message from our friend over at Underdog. Say hello to your new favorite place to play fantasy football for real money, Underdog Fantasy. With Underdog, all you need to do is the fun part. All you got to do is draft. Forget about injuries, trades, waivers, and setting lineups. Just set it and forget it and wait for those winnings to come on in. This year, they have a $1 million tournament. That's right. Just draft the best team and you have a shot at $1 million in prizes. Sign up for Underdog today and enter the Best Ball Mania for a chance at $1 million in prizes by going to UnderdogFantasy.com or searching Underdog Fantasy in your app store. Be sure to enter the code ROTOWIRE after you make your first deposit. All right, Mario, so we are going to jump into the ROTOWIRE Online Championship that I took part in on Wednesday night. So this a little bit more reactive as far as like the the markets that we talked about earlier in terms of Fournette, Ronald Jones, all of that. So I had the seventh spot, and we had very, very similar starts to this. And this is probably partially just like doing the pods and doing the radio with you and just having the osmosis of knowledge creep into my brain. So I had Nick Chubb and Jonathan Taylor as my second and third round picks as well, as picking from, again, the seventh spot. Where we differed right off the bat, you didn't have the opportunity to get him, but I did. And that was Michael Thomas starting things off in the first round. And, you know, that's a move that I hadn't really done yet to this point. But I did figure that with this being a PPR format and there being, you know, six running backs straight up just off the board now, I figured, all right, if I can just figure out running back in these next two rounds, then I won't be sinking myself completely by going with the wide receiver one here in Thomas, because that obviously ends up being the biggest, you know, factor in it all. It's like, are you giving up a true workhorse running back in order to get a receiver, which is a little bit deeper, a little bit easier to replace? But Thomas kind of sits alone in his own tier just because of the way that the offense is just geared towards getting him as many targets as humanly possible. So I'm talking myself into being pretty excited about the Michael Thomas pick there at number seven, and then following it up with Chubb and Taylor. I felt good about that, and sort of like you, I was kind of hoping that I was gonna maybe sneak Odell Beckham in. Like I didn't think about him after making my second pick, but once the third round got underway, I was like, I mean, maybe he'll be there. And then Beckham, Allen Robinson, and Kenny Golladay all go off the board. So I figured, all right, I'll go running back here. That's fine. I did have a brief moment where I did have some buyer's remorse and felt like maybe I should have gone DJ Moore there. But then my running back situation in the fourth probably would have been a little bit shaky. So I was fine with going Taylor there. The fourth and fifth round and the sixth round is where things started to get pretty interesting, I thought. I started to get the sense that you do need to, you know, kind of completely throw ADP out the window, at least in this part, and get the guys that you really are sold on one way or the other. And Terry McLaurin fit that bill for me. I didn't have any scary Terry shares just yet, so I wanted to have one, not just for the sake of it, but just because I do think that he's going to crush it again this year. I think that offense will be better. Year two, Dwayne Haskins, maybe that adds to a bounce back there for him. McLaurin, I think, is just a ridiculous talent. So
yeah,
I was down with that. And, you know, guys like DK Metcalf, who I love and have shares of as well. For the first time, I really use like the volume argument against those guys. So I felt like McLaurin didn't have that volume concern.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, no, McLaurin's got the clear runway in Washington, and I love DK Metcalf. I mean, we both were advocates of his as a prospect, but Tyler Lockett isn't going anywhere. Greg Olson's going to be a better slot receiver than whatever they were putting out last year. So unless they throw more in Seattle, there's just no way, or if Lockett gets hurt, there's no way for Metcalf to even theoretically get into the sort of usage share that McLaurin can.
Exactly. So this just really sets up well for him. And then I backed him up with Tyler Boyd. You know, we talked a little bit, but before I stepped into this draft about the wide receiver market and how it shapes up in the fifth round. And I did feel like Boyd was the best option available. I took him over guys like Stephon Diggs, T.Y. Hilton, Michael Gallup, Devontae Parker, and I would do that 10 times out of 10. Like the only guy that was close to falling to me that I would have considered over Boyd was Marquise Brown. And again, with an overall prize here, I think that Brown probably would have been my selection, but I have plenty of Marquise Brown already anyway. I have a good bit of Tyler Boyd too, but I really, really like Tyler Boyd for this year. So fine with him. And then rounding it out as far as like my flex goes, I was able to get DeAndre Swift in the sixth, which I was not expecting. So I was pretty happy about
that.
That's
a steal.
Yes.
Yeah, Swift that late. I mean, he should not be going, in my opinion, any later than Kareem Hunt going like a round earlier than Swift. Come on. Raheem Mostert should not be going ahead of Swift. I don't think Ingram should be going ahead of Swift, and all those guys did in your draft. So I think that's a really nice place to get him. People are – even if he is out week one, which we have reason to believe he will play week one, more reason to believe he will play than not, he will be so explosive in a way that Kerryon Johnson just can't even get close to imitating. And people who just rest on numbers and looking at things like draft capital look at Swift and Kerryon Johnson and can't see different things. They're just like, oh, but he's a second round pick, and he's a second round pick, and he has an experience advantage. Watch them play. Something for once,
seriously, because there isn't a huge comparison once you like actually watch the tape on those
or look
two
at
guys.
Their production.
Yeah, either way you slice it, it's pretty clear that Swift is the best running back in Detroit. So even if he does end up sitting out week one again, like you said, it doesn't seem like that, at least right now. But if that ends up being the case, I did address running back a little bit later with someone that will be able to give me some carries week one if I can't go with Swift in my flex spot. The next part of the draft is where I kind of made a bit of a misstep. I do like Matt Ryan a lot this year. I think that he's someone that once you get outside of the tier that you mentioned, the Dak, Russ, Kyler, and Deshaun Watson tier, I think that he's the next guy up for me. I think that he's someone that, they don't have a great run game. They're going to be playing from behind a lot. Obviously, the natural advantages of playing in the NFC South as far as like either bad defenses or favorable weather conditions or both in some cases is going to be enough to see a really high passing volume from him. And then I know that you have Julio Jones as your wide receiver one for this year, if that's still the case. Calvin Ridley is obviously amazing as well. Maybe Hayden Hurst really finds that next level. So I think that Ryan is going to put up awesome production this year. The problem is that I got him thinking that I was going to be able to sneak Zach Moss through into the eighth round, and that ended up not happening. He went with the third pick in the eighth round. I took Matt Ryan with the fifth pick of the seventh round. So I knew that was a possibility that Moss would be gone by the next time that I was up. But I guess in the moment I talked myself into Ryan. Because that next tier of quarterbacks, Josh Allen, I'm not super excited about. Drew Brees, Carson Wentz, like those guys, I'm not as in on. So I would have had to end up waiting a lot longer and for like a Baker Mayfield or a Joe Burrow. So I was fine with going Matt Ryan, but again, burned me a little bit, changed my running back strategy. And thereafter, I went after Christian Kirk and Preston Williams and Jordan Howard. So a little mini Miami stack there on my bench, and I was also pretty happy with getting my first Christian Kirk share as well.
I know you wanted to get Moss there, but I think you perhaps were actually given a blessing in disguise by having that option denied, because I'm really high on Christian Kirk. I don't think it makes any sense for him to fall as far as he does, and especially in a league like this where it's like if Jarvis Landry, I'll just say it, Christian Kirk will outscore Jarvis Landry this year, and Jarvis Landry goes in like the sixth round. I don't know what people think Christian Kirk is. I don't know if they know anything about him, but it just doesn't make any sense. He should not be going later than guys like Jarvis Landry. He shouldn't be going later than Diontae Johnson. It's nonsense in my opinion. And I think you will be glad to have Kirk on your team. I love Zach Moss, of course, but at least in the context of your broader running back depth chart turned out pretty solid, in my opinion. So it'd be one thing if it's like we looked at your team and it's like, ooh, you really could have used a better running back four. But since you have Chubb, Taylor Swift, maybe I'm being a little reckless and having too much faith in my prospect evaluations there. But I think those guys do the trick. And basically, I would expect Moss to have just kind of ended up being a bunch of bench points for you anyway.
Okay, so that is very possible. And I have plenty of Moss elsewhere. So not the end of the world, I guess, after all, because again, you know, did end up with Christian Kirk, who could be a steal. I like Preston Williams a lot for this year too. I think now that he's back from the knee injury, I think that he's going to be good to go. I think that Miami offense as a whole is going to be significantly better this year, you know, bordering on, you know, actually competitive. Then after that, as you might have surmised, I did not have a tight end through the first 10 rounds. I dipped into the Mario well. I went after Austin Hooper, and I was pretty happy to get him where I did. I knew that a tight end run was coming. I just wasn't sure where. Gronk and Jared Cook had just gone to a few picks before in the previous round, and I figured, all right, like it's probably Austin Hooper time, and I have a lot of Hockenson already. I recognize his upside. I see it with Noah Fant, even though there's some inconsistencies to his game. I just think that you've laid out the case for Austin Hooper enough on this podcast, but essentially, with Baker Mayfield's ability with tight ends, with the emphasis on tight end in Cleveland now that Stefanski's there and the contract that they gave Hooper, and plus Hooper's just kind of really high efficiency, that was enough for me to be pretty happy with waiting on tight end and still landing him in the 11th.
Yeah, the 11th round is late for Hooper, especially in point per reception leagues. So I think that's totally good. I have taken Hockenson over him at certain times, but that was more of kind of a chasing upside kind of thing. I would say Hooper easily has the higher floor between himself and Hockenson. And the only reason I wouldn't give Hooper the upside lane to consider is just because I don't really think the Browns are going to throw the ball that much, or at least if they plan on it, they should probably add some better receiver personnel. But it looks like they're going to go with just kind of like an Njoku, Hooper, Landry, Beckham offense for most of the time, and with Nick Chubb, the running back, of course. I actually really think that a lot of the Hooper skepticism, it's not just people trying to rationalize their kind of blind faith in Hayden Hurst. It's that they need to put down Hooper to justify their ridiculous valuations of Kareem Hunt. Because if this is an offense where it's a two receiver offense basically, and you're still saying like Hooper's not going to do anything in that case, it's like you're saying, oh well, this running back is going to catch whatever 65, 70 passes. Part of the problem is too is like something like I don't know, like a fifth or some decent number of Hunt's snaps in those eight games for Cleveland last year were literally at tight end. And that's going to turn to zero now. And Hooper's going to take all those snaps, and people aren't really, they're just generally dismissing Hooper as an entirely system player from Atlanta. And it's, they want to believe that because if he is, then it means Kareem Hunt is going to be necessary. But I think Hunt will be a change of pace player. I think it's a guy they'll try to get him screens and stuff if the pass rush is a problem for the offense that day. And certainly he's a good running back as a pure runner. So if a run heavy offense, a two tight end run heavy offense is what they're calling, even if Nick Chubb is getting 18, 20 carries per game, they can still get 10 carries to Hunt, three or four catches. But the idea that Hunt is going to be this kind of like league winner type, or at least like justifiable as a fifth round pick, even if Chubb doesn't get hurt, that necessarily is saying like, oh, well, don't worry about Hooper. He's not going to do anything. And Hooper's going to do something. I don't think you need to believe he's all that good to see it. He's definitely going to play a lot. And if Jarvis Landry is the second best receiver, I think Hooper generally beats him, because if you're running at a two wide set with two tight ends, Landry's further away from the slot that he usually runs in where he's at his best. And Hooper is effectively the closer analog to the slot route runner because he's running from tight end, which is closer to the quarterback. They're running the same depth and Landry's just laterally further away. And by the way, he's like barely faster than Hooper. I think Hooper wins that, and I don't think people are taking that possibility seriously at all, even though at the time Hooper had been given the biggest contract at tight end in the league.
See? Yeah, so those are all details that have been overlooked to varying degrees. I think that Hooper is probably their best red zone threat. He's someone who caught six touchdowns last year. It wouldn't shock me if he at least match that even on less targets or even bested it this year. I think that he does have that ability, got the big mitts and all that good stuff. So I do like Austin Hooper there. I was happy to end up with him, but I piggybacked him two rounds later with Blake Jarwin, acknowledging that he's at best like the fifth option in that Cowboys passing game, but that Cowboys passing game, had the most yardage, I believe, in the league last year. And Jarwin's not going to be losing out on snaps to the ghost of Jason Witten anymore. So I thought that was a fine enough pick, and he's wearing his varsity jacket in his NFFC picture, which is pretty funny. So that was also a determining factor.
Gives you a little leverage on Jerry, who had Dak.
Oh, true. That is a good call. Rounding things out as far as my roster went, I did end up with Darrell Henderson. Feel nauseous about that. I feel like he's going to...
It's fine.
You think so?
Running back five, it's fine.
Okay. All right. That makes me feel better.
It might not. It probably won't work or whatever, but it's running back five. Who cares?
Yeah. And my running backs one through three are pretty stacked. So
and four. Yeah. Howard as a four is good.
Okay. You're talking me back. It makes me feel a lot better. And then I got Jerick McKinnon as like a slight hedge. I'm like pretty in on Mostert this year. I have a lot of shares of him, but if that doesn't work out, I wanted some way to piggyback into benefiting out of it. Jerick McKinnon might represent that. I don't really know. I just kind of went for it. I was a little bit shook with Josh Kelly and Darrington Evans and Benny Snell all flying off the board.
He's the pass catcher, so that's a decent flex back. Up basically.
There we go. Ended up with I was gonna go after Baker Mayfield in the 15th. He ended up getting taken, so I went with N'Keal Harry. Again, it was just one of those situations where I felt like in New England, he's really the only legit outside receiver. And I know you might laugh when I say that he's a legit outside receiver, given how muted his rookie season was. But I think year two will be, you know, his time to shine. And if he doesn't, then, you know, he might just be kind of toast in that case. But I think that he will at least have the opportunity to get it done as the outside receiver there. And maybe they're not going to be as slot reliant in New England this year now that they have Cam Newton. So all of that combined was enough for me to go after Harry. Gardner Minshew, Chase Claypool were my next couple of picks. I imagine Claypool will end up being a wash of a pick, but if he's not, then that's cool. Tennessee, I think that defense is being slept on a little bit this year. I think that they are pretty awesome, and this isn't just, you know, from their performance in the playoffs. I think that they have a core that's kind of ascending. I think that was it Jeffrey Simmons is their rookie defensive end from a year ago.
Yeah.
I think that he's about to be a serious problem for teams across the league.
Scary.
Yeah, really, really.
They're still they signed Vic Beasley. Hopefully he gets his stuff together. He was a weird like COVID holdout kind of thing. But I think they're still chasing Clowney too, so that might happen.
And if it does, then all the better. So I definitely like Tennessee as one of those, like, if you're waiting on defense and continuing to like stockpile your depth elsewhere, you can wait on them, and I think that you'll end up being pretty happy with it. You know, especially as an 18th round pick, I was like, okay, I will absolutely take that. And then James Robinson was my last skill position guy before I hit the kicker. So I was pretty happy with it overall. I'm a little bit leery sometimes of like the sites software that gives you your draft grade, and you know, I'm usually like proud when like what one website says that I have like an F or something. I'm like, okay, that means I did it right, and I'm gonna prove.
Well, don't they give you an A if you auto draft? Like, isn't it bad to have the ADP as your exact draft order? I don't know.
I would think so, but either way, I graded out well on the NFFC's website, and then we have this cool feature. I don't know how much you've used it yet, but you can import your league onto RotoWire, and it will give you a draft grade. If you import your draft, it will give you like the best free agent pickups, the best value plays or value selections and biggest reaches within your draft. So it really cool feature. I didn't really use the My Leagues feature on RotoWire a ton last year, but I've imported every league that I've drafted thus far on there, and I got to say, like the tech team has done like a pretty amazing job with that. And I really like just having a sort of like central dashboard, because, you know, we play on so many different sites. So
too many tabs,
way too many tabs. So that simplifies and stratifies it for you. So if you're out there and you're a subscriber, definitely recommend doing that. And then quickly before we get out of here, we can talk about Jerry's team. Jerry went with the modified zero RB and was able to stick the landing, I thought, for the most part. So he picked second overall, ended up with Saquon Barkley, then went Kittle, Calvin Ridley, AJ Brown. I'm so jealous of the Ridley Brown duo. That's one that I try to strive for in most of the drafts that I do. So really like that. Michael Gallup, he got Dak Prescott as well. Marvin Jones. So then, you know, we're through seven rounds and he only has one running back, and then he hammers like your classic PPR running backs. And you know, if he gets one out of those three right, then he's going to be fine. And that was James White, Chase Edmonds, and Duke Johnson, for picks 8 through 10.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I would have done differently than him is I'm kind of going with the strategy of going cheaper at tight end, whereas he took Kittle in the second round, which, you know, Kittle's a beast. I just kind of – I like to chase those cheap, at least in PPR, those Herndon, Hawkinson type guys. He got Hawkinson late, so I'm almost like, now your tight ends are too good. But yeah, he's got, like you said, White to kind of give the floor play at running back every week, and then it looks like he's just hoping for one of Edmonds, Duke Johnson, Tevin Coleman to just have something go right to give that flex tied up spot. Yeah, James Washington in the 15th, I think, could also pay off pretty good for him.
Yeah, I know that Jerry's been a big James Washington fan throughout this offseason, and he did end up going, you know, probably later than he should. And I was very torn going between N'Keal Harry and him.
You both should have taken Steven Sims.
Yeah,
or Paris Campbell.
I figured I would hear about the Sims thing at one point or another.
You're gonna hear about the Sims thing.
He was in my queue at least, and I don't have any way of proving that, but I swear to God, he was in my queue, and then he got.
Oh man, this guy took Antonio. Not you. These other guys in the draft took Antonio Brown and Russell Gage over Steven Sims. Just awful.
Just lighting their entry on fire. But anyway, that's gonna wrap it up. The rest of Jerry's team, Ryan Tannehill, he's got Baltimore's defense, it looks like, in Tampa Bay's defense. Also drafted two kickers, so that's a bold move, Cotton, but fair enough, you know.
Cornered the market on kickers.
I like it. Zane Gonzalez, a really good college kicker, and maybe Arizona will score a lot of touchdowns this year, so get a lot of extra point opportunities, and obviously not kicking in adverse conditions. Don't really know much about the stylings of one Joey Sly, but I imagine that Carolina won't be scoring a lot of touchdowns this year.
Good kicker name.
But yes, extremely good kicker name. I had a good tweet from like last summer of the best college football kicker names. I don't know where it is right now, but there are some good ones. But anyway, that is going to wrap things up for this edition of the Thursday RotoWire NFL podcast, brought to you by Dynasty Owner. For Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.